Welcome to Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast for your dose of dish. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to another episode of Gay Talk 2.0, an LGBT podcast streaming live on Digital Stream Radio. You can listen live every Monday at 6:30 or 6 ish. Or 5. I don't know.
You never know.
We get there. Anyway, that live stream is available at digitalstreamradio.com. On today's episode, we're going to welcome Stephen Esteb. He's the director of the film Hate Crime, which chronicles the aftermath of the death of a young gay man at the hands of his apparent lover, and how parents on both sides cope with this tragedy. My name is Tom, and I am your host. And joining us today is our first host.
It's Elsie.
And?
Hi, it's Meg.
And, of course.
Hey, y'all. Nick or Trish.
And welcome you all to
The Dish.
I am so proud of you all. You did it.
So
we had a whole rehearsal, and we went through the whole spiel, but we got through it. We did it.
That's mainly because of me.
So anyway, as you know, Chris is taking a hiatus. He's doing some school stuff, which we support, and we're super happy for him that he's doing that. And so in his place, we wanted to bring two of our amazing co-hosts who have been on the show before and do amazing work. They're such great conversationalists. We bounce back and forth. You've been on the show before, and we love it. So thank you, Elsie and Meg, for joining us today.
Absolutely.
Thank you, guys.
Super Yay! Happy to be here.
And so that opener, Lock Him Up. So for the past 2.5 years, all we've ever heard is Trump's obsession with Hillary Clinton and locking her up. And so during the World Series, the fifth game, which just happened over the weekend, he actually attended one of the games, and the crowd literally, as soon as he was announced, started booing him and then started chanting, "Lock him up." And I can't tell you how elated I was when I heard this, or when I seen this video, and I said, you know what? He needs to get the message that what he's doing and how he's doing it is just not going to work for the American people. And so I know how I felt, but I wanted to just open it up to the table and tell me, how did you feel, Elsie, when you heard that?
Right.
Her face. Oh.
Right. Honestly, my first reaction was, why in hell do you think it was even okay to show up to this game? Like, can you make some
barricade yourself in the White House, please?
Right.
Yes. Like, literally.
Build your own wall in Colorado.
Have fun around your red Christmas trees. Or were they black? Mm. Last year's Christmas trees, they were red or something like that. It was like a horror film watching the whole entire hall of Christmas trees, like, decorated in the white. I was like, who the hell did that and why?
Because it makes sense given the circumstances and who lives there.
You know what?
I'm saying.
Thank you, Elsie.
It goes with the theme.
See, you just bring things into perspective, and that's why we love you. So, Meg, how did that make you feel?
Well, I mean, it was good to hear it on the reverse side.
Uh-huh.
However, knowing how delusional he is, he's going to think that everyone was chanting along with
Lock her up.
Not just that, but at his recent rally, they were talking about Joe Biden's son.
Yes.
He had the whole place chanting, lock him up. So
oh
I guarantee
God.
You that he thought that they were right behind him. He's like, see, everyone feels the way I feel. Like, that's how delusional.
That is exactly
I bet he didn't even hear
happen.
It. And he didn't even
see it
hear
on
it.
Twitter.
And you know what's crazy? So so we know that they had announced that they were going to be opening impeachment. They were going to do an inquiry impeachment on his behavior and his dealings with Ukraine. And then it was just like, oh my God, he gave the congressional office the evidence that they needed to actually go forward with this impeachment stuff. And I was thinking to myself, how stupid can you be? The one thing that was incriminating you, which was that phone call, where you're asking a foreign power to help you investigate your political opponent. Otherwise, you're not going to get money that was already appropriated by Congress for your country for military support. And if you don't do that for us, we're not going to give you this money. I was just like, why would you give them that?
Because nothing sticks. Nothing sticks.
You're right. You're true. True.
What does he care?
But here's the thing. So breaking news.
Tally it up.
Oh, my God. I haven't heard that in
so long.
Months. So Nancy Pelosi actually went on the record now. She officially announced that they are going to take a vote on the floor to actually start the impeachment proceedings on this president.
Thank God.
Today. That happened literally 15 minutes ago while we were still prepping and going through the notes and everything. It's just like everything's changing. But I was just like, wow, this is happening and it's happening so fast. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, how will it happen? Right. That's a question. Like you said, nothing sticks. So now we have an official vote. It's going to be happening on the floor, but will it stick?
It'll never pass the Senate. So,
right.
And that's the thing. So, you know, as we know, when Bill Clinton went through the whole Monica Lewinsky scandal, well, actually, let's call it a Bill Clinton scandal, because honestly, I think we owe Monica Lewinsky an apology. When he went through that scandal, he got impeached in the House, but he never got convicted in the Senate. And therefore, he was allowed to actually finish his two terms in office. And I think that this is very likely for this idiot that we have in the White House.
Yep.
I was just like, wow. But it's happening. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have to live through this. And we have elections happening next week for a lot of, local elections, local officials, whether they're your, you know, community leaders or mayors or, I don't know.
You'll get there.
Governors. It's happening. And so all I ask and all I say is this, learn from what we experienced in 2016. Understand the fact that you need to understand, you need to know who it is that is representing you locally, because they are the most important elections of people that you'll ever make in your life. These are the people that you are electing into office that could immediately impact you at a local level and also drive the conversation and a movement to where it needs to be on a national level. So keep that in mind. So, Nick, how are you, darling?
I'm fine. I'm here. Queer.
She's going through her computer and doing things. So that being said, opener explained. I want to open it up to weekends. And so I'm going to kick it over to Trish. Uh-huh. And Trish, why don't you tell us what you did this weekend?
I didn't do much of anything, really.
She went on a date.
No, that was last week.
Oh, okay. Throw her under the bus right from the beginning. But anyway.
But I'm not going to talk about that.
I was going to say, how'd the day go?
I thought it went well, but evidently I was wrong. So that's beside the point.
Oh, son of a.
Look, here's the thing.
Tally it up.
I had a wonderful time. I think we had a great time. And then the response from the other end was not, you know.
And that's okay.
Yeah, that's what dating's all about.
Yeah, there's nothing
wrong with that. But like, I'm 32, and if I hear one more person say something about a goddamn spark, I'm going to fucking burn it the fuck down.
With that fucking spark.
Let's be honest here. Like,
that's too funny.
What are you doing? What? Like, what spark? Like, what is a spark? I've had the spark before.
A connection.
Really? Is it Optimus Prime. There's no spark. Like, let's grow up.
So that didn't work out, but I'm sure you did other things throughout the weekend.
Friday I worked. It was all right. Saturday, I was like,
this is a compelling recap.
Dead and done.
I know.
And Sunday I was like, I have to work. Yeah. So that is my weekend.
Yeah, it was an interesting Halloween celebration weekend, right? Because it's the first weekend leading up to the Halloween holiday. Excuse me, which is on Thursday. And it was really quiet. It was a quiet weekend. Saturday I worked at the bar. That was pretty quiet. And then Sunday we didn't really get that many people until like after the fact. But overall, it was a very, very nonchalant, quiet Halloween weekend.
Yeah.
Did you ladies do anything fun?
Well, because I'm wild that way, babysat a 7-year-old on Saturday night. That was a good time. And this kid explains to me the importance of breaking up before you get married so that it's less messy. especially if there are kids involved. And by the way, these are his words that he used throughout the conversation. So then he tells me whether, he asked me whether I know that people sometimes have ceremonies to commemorate their divorce. And then
they do?
Apparently it's a thing I learned from a 7-year-old.
Oh, wow.
So I said,
he's a well-learned 7-year-old.
Oh, it gets better. That's not even my punchline. So he said, I said to him, he was like, why would someone celebrate something so sad? And I trying to, you know, rival him and tell him, you know, I'm just as articulate as you are, 7-year-old. I said to him, well, you know, sometimes adults decide that things are not great and that they're better off not being together. And so maybe it's not so sad when they break up. And I attempted to ask whether he understood what that meant. And he interrupts me and goes, yeah, the gain in the loss. The gain in the loss.
Wow.
So I'm like, do I give you a beer now? Or what are we doing?
I'm telling you, kids nowadays are so like super smart for their age. I mean, when you think about the stuff that we were exposed to when we were growing up, it's completely different, right? Because the game has changed. Social media, mm-hmm. access to technology, it's a completely different world. And so kids nowadays are spouting terms that we didn't learn until we were like in our teenage years. And they're talking about it like they really, truly understand it.
A 6-year-old can navigate the iPhone better than I can. Like, yes. that's crazy.
Out of the womb. Out of the womb. They know how to unlock a phone as soon as they come out crying. Because, mm-hmm. like, this is how I'm going to order my bottle, because clearly you are not giving it to me.
My coworker's son literally started his own Amazon package, like, cart, and ordered everything. Because now they have the one-click order.
Oh, Lord have mercy. I'd hate to be
those parents.
All this
stuff showed up, and my coworker was like, where did this stuff go? I didn't order any of this stuff. And asked her husband, did you? And she's like, no, definitely didn't. And the kid's like, ah! Opening up his packages. I'm like, what's
here?
It is too funny. And how was your weekend, my dear?
Mine was fabulous. My wife and I went to P-Town for the weekend, our soon-to-be forever home, or at least year-round home. I shouldn't say forever. Nothing else.
I love it.
But we're downsizing our lives and we're moving
to
P-Town in January.
Which is why she's here today.
So I'm not thinking about the sad side because I'm still here 2 months, but we're excited about getting there. So we brought some stuff up, and then because it was pre-Halloween weekend, town was really busy. Like, the weather was gorgeous.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I mean, Halloween is one of their biggest celebrations up there.
Oh, yeah. Well, next weekend is when the
Spooky
real Halloween.
Bear, right?
Yes.
Oh, my God, I love it.
Yeah,
she's like, I'll be
so
there.
Fun. Oh, yeah. We have a couple costumes to choose from. We'll be there next weekend. So there's like kind of pre-festivities and I think a leftover Fantasia weekend maybe, like kind of the tail end because of the break on the weekend. And yeah, we just had great weekend. Went to a 50th birthday party that was kind of swanky at a restaurant that they rented out for hours. I'm like, oh, how do we get this invite?
Hello. Uh-huh. And, I'm there.
It was great. We had a good time. So that was the extent of our weekend.
Usually I would only ask, does it include vodka?
It was open bar.
And I'm there.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm there. So
vodka gimlets all night.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. With fresh lime, right?
Yeah, no.
Over ice.
They actually slap the basil, as my bartender friends do know. So it was a basil gimlet. So they take like a fresh basil leaf and they slap it before they put it in your drink, like a full one that floats on top. The bartenders say it kind of activates the oils or whatever
in it,
so it kind of releases a little more of the fresh basil flavor, but it's a real, it's like hysterical. I'm like, oh, I can't wait for them to slap the basil.
Slap that me,
sounds,
baby.
That sounds super dirty. Like, that's something
I know, that's what I,
like,
that's why
on
I was
the
laughing.
Fifth date.
I know. Did I jump ahead in the gay talk terms? Like,
slapping the basil.
I love it.
So
let me ask you. So obviously there's a lot of places when you go up to Provincetown. Really, it is an absolutely beautiful small town. There's lots to do, a lot of
slapping the basil.
Yes. And obviously there's a lot of theme weeks, so you can pick a week, and trust me when I tell you, you're going to have a good time. What is your favorite place in Provincetown?
Restaurant, happy hour?
Whatever amuses you.
Let's
go with food.
Favorite food. I really like Strangers and Saints, where this party was. They have, it's got like great ambiance. Their food is excellent. We gravitate. This is how bad it is. We gravitate towards certain places for certain types of food.
Uh-huh.
So like if you want like the best chicken parm of your life, you go to this little place called Ciro and Sal's. That's like, it's so great in the winter. It's open all year round. It's kind of tucked behind. It's got a working fireplace. It's like cozy, kind of low ceilings with exposed beams.
Oh, nice.
And the food, it's obviously Italian, but the food is really good. So I don't know. There's some high-end places. That's kind of some of our like go-to kind of regular places. So I don't know. Those are two of my faves.
And there's not that many that are open throughout the year because obviously once the season is over, they shut it down and then they come back.
And they've extended the season a lot. So a lot of places are staying open into January. So some close now, like after Columbus Day is kind of it, or sometimes after Halloween. And then some stay open because there's a few events in December. So
New Year's.
It's kind of, I don't know, it's been extending. Yeah. So the ones that are, there's definitely ones that close, but there's a good amount of options for a small town. I mean, it's still not like, it's not New York.
I have two places that I absolutely love. Hideaway is one of them. And,
oh, we love
and I haven't
Jimmy's.
Been there in a couple of years. So I'm not sure if it was still there, but I hope it is because their filet mignon is just incredible. And then, of course, just because, you know, you just like to be seen as people are parading up and down, Bubala is one of my favorites.
Oh, yeah.
Bubala. And, you know,
yeah, it's like right across from Spiritus Pizza. It's like maybe,
okay.
I would say it's got a huge outdoor patio.
Yeah.
So it's really good for people watching.
Oh,
and
I love people watching
in P-Town. So, and then one of the things that I love is their bread with their roasted garlic. And then you just literally spread it on the bread like if it's freaking butter. It's absolutely delicious.
Okay.
Yeah, that sounds
and
good.
And salads and everything else that they serve and calamari and all that good stuff.
So I want to bring up a point.
Yes.
So we started the show going on, what, now 3 years?
Three years this March.
Yeah, and so we started around St. Patrick's Day.
Uh-huh.
And so Meg and her wife throw this massive party every year for St.
Patrick's
Day.
She's in studio, by the way, but she's hidden away in the corner over there.
And so I went over to their house to buy some stuff off of them that they were trying to get rid of.
Well,
I was like, so what are we doing about St. Patrick's Day? And they're like, we have a plan. We have a plan and it's going to happen. So all of the stories that have been had from St. Patrick's Day on this podcast will continue. I just want to put that out there.
So we're doing it in P-Town?
No.
We might have to make a guest appearance into Milford or someplace nearby.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm game. I'm game for a lot of cursive. You know me. I love speaking cursive. It's fucking elegant.
Oh, my God.
And I miss Chris, though. You know, and I think that Chris is going to join us, and we're going to have a really good time. Good luck understanding him. But, yeah, it works. And, by the way, there's a camera here. I don't know if you know. The last time you were here, we weren't doing a live video feed.
I think you just put it in.
So you can say hi to our Patreon subscribers that are watching us.
Hi.
And but, yeah, I'm game. I'm up for that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so listen.
So I want to tell one more story about the week that I forgot to talk about.
Go for it, and then we can go to break.
So I don't know how many people that listen to the show have iPhones, but there's a function. It's called SOS. So if,
oh. This
so,
bitch.
So if you ever are in trouble, you can click. I don't even know how to do it, honestly.
It's the home button, and then just like the side button.
And it puts your phone into SOS mode, so it will call the police.
I'm not sure, I understand.
Stop.
And it will also let all of your family members know, or the people that are in your phone as emergency contacts, and it'll send your location, and it'll send that you're in distress, and that you need help.
What?
So I had a long week last week, and on Thursday, after I had a back-to-back training, 2 days, I woke up the next morning, and my phone, the screen wasn't working. Like, it wouldn't respond, and I would try to unlock it. It wouldn't do it.
I was dying.
And so I'm trying to restart my phone in hopes that, you know, maybe that'll fix it.
You know what you need? A 7-year-old.
Clearly.
Oh!
My phone went straight into SOS mode, called the police. It's got to be like 9 o'clock in the morning. I'm on the phone with the cops. Naked, basically, just about to get in the shower.
I'm fine.
Like, all right, so everything's fine. Sorry, my phone's freaking out. And it's stuck in SOS mode. So then it starts sending all these messages to my family members. And so my brother, my sister, my dad, and my mom, and my roommate are getting these messages that, like, I'm in distress and sending my location. And, like, it's just going off and off and off. And I cannot get my phone to open. So I can't respond to any of these text messages. So I'm now freaking out. I know I'm running late for work. And next thing I know, I'm, like, in the mirror. I'm trying to put my face on.
Oh, which takes a while.
Yeah, so I had half my face on.
Bondo.
And the cops show up. So the cops pull up, and I look out my window. I'm like, oh, that's for me. Clearly, that's for me. So I go downstairs.
I love everything about this story.
I go downstairs, and I open the door, and I'm like, hi. And he's like, hi, are you okay? I was like, yeah, I'm fine. He's like, what's your name? I was like, my name's Nick Bussett. What's your birthday? Give him my birthday. You know, went through the whole thing. And he's like, sir, are you sure you're okay? Can I please come into the house? You don't seem okay. I'm like, look, I'm stressed as fuck right now.
My makeup is not on.
I have half my face on. I'm in my underwear. And this hot cop is just like standing there. And I'm like, I'm fine. Everything's fine. He's like, no, sir, please. Is there anyone else in the house? And I'm like, no, there is no one else in the house but my dog. Well, is your dog friendly? Can I come in? I'm like, no, you cannot come in my house. So
but you said he was hot.
He was hot, but I was like running
around.
He was around.
Late for work. And you know, he was going to have to tell the story all over again when he got to work.
Also, I did not look good.
she got halfway through her Bonto. Mm-hmm.
Half the
Jekyll
face.
Jekyll and Hyde.
Yeah, no, it was not pretty. And anyway, so long story short, the cop finally lets me like go back to my business. He sits out front of my house until I leave for work. That's how concerned he was about me.
But you know what?
Yes.
That's New
how
Haven
concerned
PD.
He was.
Yes.
Proud of you, baby.
And you better send a thank you note and then a wink.
And a wink.
Come back.
And a phone
my
number. Because you never know. That might be the one that sparks.
I know.
Say,
maybe.
Spark emoji.
I didn't even get his name.
Oh,
damn it.
You can find out. I'm sure he wrote a report or something.
Right.
After that experience, I'll never forget his face. He straight up looked at me. He's like, sir, are you sure you're okay? You don't seem okay. I'm like, I'm fine.
Blink twice if someone is threatening.
Literally, that is what I'm not even kidding you. I'm pretty sure they thought there was somebody in my house like holding me hostage. And I'm like, no, there is no domestic. It's just me and my dog. I mean, the domestic is myself, but that's fine.
Like, oh my God, this is, it's too funny.
It was so crazy. And so on top of all of that happening, I find out that my brother's the one that called the cops because he couldn't get a hold of me. And then
the cops
called my work
oh,
because they couldn't get a hold of me. And so I can't get a hold of my work. I'm like, all right, fine. So I drive to the Apple store to get my phone fixed. They're sending updated locations now of me just traveling through New Haven.
Because you're kidnapped in the trunk of a car going to an Apple store. They don't know your destination.
No, they have no idea. And so my dad's like, what is going on? And my roommate's like, he's dead. He's dead. It's over. Like, he's in the trunk of somebody's car. You can't pick up the phone.
They killed him at Apple.
But anyway, now you know who cares.
That's the cops. Right. Sir, can I please come in?
I'm concerned that I didn't receive one of these notifications. I thought I was your bitch. I was your, you know.
Well, no, I mean like my roommate and my family, but yeah.
I love you.
You want to be a nice contact? You want to get those messages when my phone goes to SOS?
Put me on because I just want to sit there and laugh my fucking ass off.
What if I'm actually in distress, though?
I will come find you. Bitch, listen, we've told stories. So I went to Maine one time. And very quickly, and I was going to hook up with this guy that I had met online, and I said, all right, I don't know this guy.
I did.
I don't know this guy.
It didn't happen yet in the story, Chris.
Yes.
Oh! Elsie? Shut her mic off.
Mute it.
Let's please pretend that didn't happen. Tommy, go ahead, go.
Anyway, so I met this guy online and we made an agreement to meet and see if sparks would fly or whatever, and it was a hookup. Anyway,
sparks.
It was a hookup. And so when I got to the guy's house, I immediately just sent my location
to Trish.
And I said, if you don't hear from me, how much time did I give
you? I think you said half hour.
Yeah, if you don't hear from me in half hour, call the police and send them to this location. And because, you know, you really have to worry about that thing. I mean, given the subject that we're about to encounter on the second half of the show, it's a real thing. You need to be concerned about your safety when you're meeting strangers or when you're meeting anyone that you don't know. And so I sent them my location. So, yeah, I'm a little hurt.
I called you like 20 times after the half hour.
To tell me the story.
No, we've had this conversation on the show. After the half hour mark.
Oh, no. He did call, and I'm like, I'm fine, bitch. Stop calling.
And I was like, all right, then. She's like, all's good. But, I'm like, all right.
You know what? I love this. I love this man that sits here next to me every week. And outside of the show, we always hang out, and we have amazing moments, you know, and I'm happy that you're in my life.
Mm-hmm. We had a little bit of a tiff on Saturday, but
that's
okay.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, don't make me talk about that on air.
Anyway, that's how you know if you love each other.
Yeah, well,
you can survive those.
There was a Steve involved, so.
There's always a Steve involved.
Bitch, I'm not going home with you.
Mark with
but she
Steve.
Went home. There were sparks. The muffler, as it's dragging. Anyway, guys, listen, we need to take a break because we do have a guest that's coming on in the second half of the show. So I'm going to leave you all with some music. And when we come back, we're going to have Stephen Estep join us on the show to talk about Hate Crime, which is that movie that we have been talking about for the past week. So here's some music. We'll be right back.
It's hard to see you with a man you call your friend, but in the end, I know I don't have much time to tell you why I wanna die, but then I cry, so then I lie, so I don't make you bend time. Cause if you cause I
All right. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, from the break. That was the incredible Pat Riley, a previous guest of ours, with Time, one of his amazing songs. And we do love playing it on the show. So thank you for waiting for us while we come back from break. And now joining us, of course, is the director of the film Hate Crime, which is a story. It's truly a heartbreaking story of what I believe to be the view of parents who go through this this incredible tragedy between two young men who apparently have some sort of relationship, and one of them ends up killing the other, and you start to see what it's like from the view of parents, you know, on both sides of the spectrum, and how they deal with the aftermath of what happened. And so I want to take the time to, of course, welcome Stephen Estep to the show. Did I say your last name right?
You did. Fantastic.
Thank you. And I've been literally losing sleep over it for the past week because, of course, I wanted to make sure that I do justice to the people that we have on the show. So thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, man, I'm so happy to be here. So happy to be here.
So let's start with...
I'm Nick.
Well, I'm getting there.
Okay.
So this is Nick sitting over here my right. Of course, I am Tom. And joining us today are two special guest hosts. We have Elsie and we have Meg over here with the champion sweater on. Not that we're advertising anyone.
I got the Pelicans right
Pelicans,
here.
Pelicans, yes.
Nice.
So, yes. So they're joining us. Meg, unfortunately, we made a boo-boo. I'm going to admit to it. We sent her, instead of sending her the actual movie file for her to see, this one here.
I fucked up twice.
We sent her the preview for the movie, but Elsie actually got to watch it. So, we're going to try to, be as knowledgeable as possible of the film. But of course, you're here, which is why we're having you on.
And I have seen it.
Well, a couple times, right?
A couple thousand times.
And so, I will watch it because just the preview alone, it's such a tough topic. And I think it's such an interesting, you know, nuanced way to look at things, because I always think about that. I was just saying to my wife, like, when I see something on the news, I can't help but instantly think about what the parents are going through. On both sides, mm-hmm. and especially the parents of someone that did something horrific, whether it's something like this horrific or, you know, even stealing or what, you know, some crime that's brought them there. Because, like, I just feel like the average parents, you know, they didn't set out to raise a murderer, right? They didn't,
right.
They're not instilling that. So there's more to it. And there's probably some stories that is really obvious when parents, you know, had a hand in things. And then mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of parents that probably did the best they could and can't believe that this happened.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of that. I think that sometimes the best you can do is you just don't know any better. Right. And a lot of people, like I live in the South. I'm not from the South, but I live in the South. And a lot of people don't even know better than what they're saying and doing. And I think that's what really attracted me to this script initially was, you know, a lot of people had told me when I was trying to get the project together that, well, this issue's already solved, you know, but they're coming from Los Angeles saying that or somewhere else. It's not solved where I live at all.
Right.
And I think it's funny because we started making this movie in 2014, 2015, in that area. And it's more important now than it was in 2015. I'm going to tell you that right now with what's happened in the world, the politics of the world. I think right now, the hate crimes, not just against, you know, gay and lesbian or trans people, but it's also just anyone who would be considered the other from wherever you're coming from. And I think it's just on fire right now. And we have to stop it. And I think it stops with parents. You know, right. You raise, like, people always ask me at the end of a festival, like, you know, what do I want people to know? I just tell them, you know, just love the shit out of your kids, you know, and accept them for who they are. See them for who they are. And you got a great chance for a positive outcome.
That's right. You know,
and that's really what we're going for here.
That's right.
So let's jump back to the film itself. Can you tell us a little bit more about what the movie's about and what you're trying to get across?
Sure. Well, initially the writer, he was actually sitting around thinking, what's the worst thing that could happen to a couple or a set of parents. And he started building out from that. And he came across this. And the person who wrote it is the most unlikely person to ever written this. You wouldn't believe it if you met him. He's just a conservative, middle-of-the-road sort of fellow in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and he just wrote this amazing little script. The first time I read it, I was like, oh, my God, it's everything in between the lines. But it's really about two sets of parents. A terrible tragedy has happened, and, you know, one son murdered the other son for being gay. There's a lot of twists and turns in this story, and I don't want to, you know, put all the spoilers in there, but... You know, one set of parents, they saw their son for who he was. They raised him. They let him be out and be himself and were happy for him and all that. And he's dead. Another set of parents raised their son a different way. And now he's being executed at midnight for that crime. So it's really about trying to figure out how this happened between these sets of parents, and particularly the parents of the killer. Obviously, there's a lot of repression, and this is the consequences of that repression.
So it's interesting because when we look at stories, and especially documentaries or movies that are made of true life events, you typically see the side of the story of the victims, of the parents and victims, and you barely ever get to see what it's like for the parents of the actual person who committed the atrocities, what they go through. And so watching this film, it really, I appreciate the fact that we went left field when it comes to telling the story, and you're really focusing on not so much what happened. We know what happens when the crime happens because we see it in the film, but it's not the main focus of the film. And we start
it's more like the inciting event more than anything else.
Right. And it really plays out into allowing us to really look into a lens that typically we are not afforded an opportunity to do so. Elsie and I were having a conversation earlier about the fact that, you know, when things like this happen and your son ends up being the person who committed this atrocity, parents tend to sort of kind of go through these stages of like, that's okay. That things that happen to them in the immediate aftermath, it's they go through this self-seclusion, right? I don't want to talk to the media. I don't want to see people. I don't want to even talk to my friends or even family. I just want to be left alone because we need time to process this.
Yeah.
Seeing that side of the story, seeing what they go through in that space, in that house, really puts into perspective the fact that we really need to look at all sides when something like this happens. And I really appreciated that from the writer and obviously from producing the film for showcasing that and allowing that to come through in the film. It was very important.
Yeah, I think that's what made it really interesting to me. When I first, it was actually one of my students who wrote it. I teach screenwriting and he had given me the first act, which is very challenging. And you saw the film, you know, the first act is very, very challenging because you don't know what's going on and you seeing people going through hell and you're living in their pain and their shit. And you're like, oh my God, what the hell is happening? But when I read it, and I read a lot of scripts, so usually I would be turned off by that, but I just wanted to know what was happening, you know? And you're actually, I think the reason the film works is in the second act, all kinds of things revealed, et cetera, et cetera. And you get all the answers. But by living in the pain with these people and watching them just go through hell, like looking at each other, like, how did this happen? And just like at midnight, their son is going to be killed.
Right.
And he did a terrible thing and they don't understand it either. And they're living in that pain. So the writer and the film, we make you live through it. And it's really, really challenging for the viewer. And I think those people that's who we need to get to.
It's interesting because you're 100% right. When I was watching the film, it was, how do I feel? Do I relate more to the fact that this person who is out and proud is now dead, or am I relating to the fact that this person is going to be killed for what he did and loved this other person? And it was really, really difficult, and actually brings up a really important topic that Elsie brought up earlier, which is, was it a hate crime? And I don't know if you want to speak to that, Elsie, at all, but I thought it was an important topic to talk about.
Right.
So it's a really good question.
Right. Was it a hate crime or was it self-hate? He clearly was in love with this person, and it was self-acceptance where he was struggling with his own sexuality. And and what I took away from it was the fact that because he was struggling with his own sexuality, it was self-hate that caused him to be so violent towards his partner.
Absolutely. I think I often get asked, why is this called hate crime? Because it seems like a really, like you expect it to be like American History X or something like that. Mm-hmm. But we had a different title. It was initially called Heartland. But there was another LGBT film that was coming out at the same time ours was, called Heartland, as well as the series that had been on for like 12 years or something like that. So somebody came with this idea. We never really like loved it, but it really started to work in a way, from what you're saying, Elsie, is that the hate crime is not, in this story, is the hate crime is hating yourself. Mm-hmm. And it's also the crime of the father, you know, not accepting his son for who he was, or not even allowing himself to see it. Like, the mother always kind of knew. I think there's a line there, you knew, you always knew. And he's like, how could I, you know, he was just denying that he knew. And I think that is the crime, and that is the hate crime. I mean, in this story, there's many versions of hate crime in this world that are valid, you know, for what they are. But in this story, that is what's on trial here, how we love our son, how we love our daughters.
So basically, it's a hate crime, but it's not the hate crime that we know or that we have come to in recent decades, you know, given the situation with, for example, when you think about what happened to Matthew Shepard, and when you think about what happened to other members of the LGBT community, and of course, our trans community, which has seen over 23 deaths of trans women alone this year.
Including the producer and editor of this film, who was trans and killed himself a year ago.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. I'm so sorry to hear that.
Wow. Yeah. My best friend. Blake Palmentier, who changed his name to Emma. So it's Emma Palmentier.
So in
the titles, it's Blake Palmentier. But it's a crusher, you know. The film actually helped him come out to her, and it was just, you know, just really tough. I mean, really, really tough. So it hits me personally on a lot of levels. I spent so many years. This is one of my best friends for a long, long time. And we were in the trenches on this movie for a long, long time, and sat there editing and trying to craft these moments. And he had worked with me on other films in the past, or she. It's hard for me to go to he to she, because he was he for me for my so many years of my life. Mm-hmm. But we credited the film as Blake Palmentier because he had not come out yet as Emma. So, you know, that's how it is in the credits. But it was a heartbreak. I'm still not over it. I'm not going to lie. I can't let go of it. And it's sort of a strange journey for me, because early in my first film I ever made was a documentary about an AIDS hospice. And that was in the early 90s when AIDS was like just mm-hmm. the worst version of what it could be. And I'd spent 3 years there, and it was a life-changing experience. So, you know, I'm straight, but I've always had this connection. And I watched at that AIDS hospice, the real consequences of repression, trying to get parents to come and just to visit their son or daughter prior to their death. And having to just like, almost be like, violent to get them there. You know, we were so angry about just trying to make people have a good death, you know. But there would be those miracles where they would come sometimes, and you'd see something happen that you'd start thinking maybe there is God, you know, because something great would happen. But that's how it started for me. So this film became like the other end of this journey for me in some ways, a way to sort of go at this a different way. I know that's I just put out a big bunch of stuff.
Yeah,
there,
but no, and now I'm like brain going. So I want to know a little bit more about your back history. How as a straight male did you end up in a situation like this, where you are not only in this AIDS situation, but you're also producing films like Hate Crime? Like, What led you to this?
I think, you know, it's really funny. I'd kind of had my heart broken. I'd just been divorced and I was just looking for something to had some meaning. And I was at a producer's house in Hollywood Hills pitching some bullshit story. And while I'm in there pitching it, this woman shows up and interrupts my pitch and she's like an ex-nun who is managing this AIDS hospice. And I met her and I just listened to everything she had to say. And I was like, oh my God, I think I have found my reason, you know? And it's funny, she gave me her card and she told me to call her to come see it because I was looking for some project, something to do. And I swear to God, I put that card right at the base of my computer and I looked at it every day for a month and didn't call because I was terrified of making that call.
Yeah.
For a thousand reasons. And then when I called it, I finally got the balls to call her and I just said, hello. And is Debbie there? She goes, Steve? What is this, Steve? I go, yeah, yeah. She goes, I thought you were going to call me. I'm like, oh, I'm calling you now. She goes, I've been sitting here waiting for your call. So I went out there, I walked into this amazing place where it was horrible and wonderful and hilarious and sad and everything you can think of about life all mixed into one thing. Because, you know, you're mostly dealing with people that are young.
Right.
You know, it's not like you're at a hospice where you're seeing your grandfather die at 82 or something. You're looking at a 22-year-old man and you're just watching this happen and having this generation of talented, wonderful people just being taken out. Right. So to me, it just grabbed me by the heart. I could not let go.
And I picture this nurse looking like Sandra Bernhardt. Is that wrong?
Well, sort of. Yeah. She was an ex-nun. She had spent like 20 years working on Skid Row in downtown Los Angeles. And this opportunity came and she
sounds like the character from Pose. That was all. Like, she sounds just like the character from Pose.
I know. She just like that. Her goal in life was to make sure that this is going to sound crazy, but her goal, you're going into the end of people's lives, right? That's it. You know, that's happening. No one's going to get out of this alive when they're at that situation, mm-hmm. out of that place. Her goal was to give every single person that lived there a beautiful death. And it just, when I heard those words come out of her, my heart just went, oh my God, I want to be part of this. I want to help her. I want to do something. So I just made this little documentary. And it's funny because when I made the documentary, all the people that were there when I walked in the door the first time were the most charismatic people you could ever meet, all there at the same time. And of course, it took a year to raise all the money. And so you're in a place where your cast is continually dying. You know, so there's another group of people, then another group of people. By the time we actually made the movie, it's strange. It ended up being more about the caregivers because that was the constant, you know, of the place. These people that are giving of themselves and like laying it on the line for people they never met before in their life. And the people that were there were a strange mix of straight, gay, you know, old, young, housewives, you know, it was a weird mix of people and they were just laying it on the line for people. And it just was amazing to me. And so I've always, since then, I mean, I was like, I got pulled into that AIDS activism. I was like part of ACT UP. I was just like out of control. I went to the AIDS quilt so many times. I can't even tell you, helping people deliver quilt panels and it just became part of my life. But I have to say, at a certain point, I think I had PTSD from that. I mean, it was really tough to get over.
Right.
Because so luckily, the AIDS cocktail showed up and started making it, you know, kind of an obsolete world, you know, that we were in then. But it just, which is the awesome news. But I think I and a lot of people who were there would have PTSD from so many people passing. It's difficult. And it's a hard death, you know.
A lot of people don't realize the impact that HIV and AIDS had, especially in the 80s and early 90s, or even to the mid 90s. You know, it's and you mentioned the show Pose, and one of the most heartbreaking moments for me watching that show, because I have to tell you, Ryan Murphy is a fucking genius, and mm-hmm. I thank him every day for doing what he does. But one of the things that I learned that broke my heart watching that show was the fact that there's an island that exists. It's called Heart Island. And on this island, there are countless unidentified people that were buried on this island because parents and people that were supposed to love them refused to claim their bodies when they died of AIDS, and therefore they were buried on this island
on top of one another.
Literally. On top of one
another.
That's
real?
Yes, it is. Yeah. Very real.
Oh, God.
It is very real. And and to think that, you know, you go through life, you're born, your parents, you know, you come out of your mother, and then you find out that you are who you are, and you want to be who you are, and your parents disown you for them, for being who you are. And then you end up, your resting place is an unidentified box with a number on it, in the middle of the East River, is heartbreaking. And
That's what drives me. Those kind of things right there, just like right where we are right now, that, you know, the number one cause of death for gay teenagers is suicide. It's just that's not acceptable. I'd rather have accidents and, like everyone else, you know, you fall off your bike or something like this is not going to stand for me.
And the craziest part of that is that since 2014, mm-hmm. it has significantly spiked for LGBT youth in suicide and homelessness. And maybe that's because of more awareness. Maybe right. that's because of social media. Maybe that's because of Trump. I don't know. You know, there's nothing behind it. But, like, the reality is everybody thinks it's getting better. And it is getting better to be gay and live and be okay. But, like, the reality is there's a lot going on that people that aren't involved like yourself, as a heterosexual, that don't get and don't understand. And
but progress isn't linear.
Don't.
Right. Progress isn't linear. And so if you compare things exactly today to 1960 or 1920 or pick a date, yes, there's a drastic difference. But if you compare things day to day, it doesn't, I don't know, I just don't think it works in a linear fashion. And I totally am identifying with some of what you're saying that, you know, some people are thinking like this problem is solved, that we don't have to deal with this. But I can tell you 3 weeks ago in P-Town, one of the gayest places on earth, right? Like you don't get a lot gayer than P-Town.
Truth.
Yeah.
You know, and it's super liberal and all of that in one of our favorite bars. We weren't there, but we heard about it after. I won't go into all the gory details, but long story short, a woman was there with her husband and she got irritated with a bartender and called him a fucking F word.
Wow.
Wow.
In P-Town. That must have gone really well for her.
Oh, she was escorted out of the bar.
There's also layers in the gay world as well. I mean, there's a lot of older gay people who have trouble with trans. You know, they don't have room for that. You know, the kids are all clear. Like, even where I live in a small town in Louisiana, the kids are cool with gay, black, Hispanic, Asian. You know, they don't care that much. But the parents are the ones you got to get to.
It's a generational thing.
Some of these kids grow up to become parents.
That's right.
Right. But there's also a more complex issue. And as a straight person, it's something that I struggle with. You are still human, and we're all prejudiced about a lot of things.
That's
and
right.
We tend to, even when we have conversations about some of your involvement with this AIDS community, right? We tend to talk about it in such a terrible, terrible, dismissive way. Oh, it's because they're gay. No, it's because we're a bunch of assholes that have pushed people who are different than ourselves into having to go into the most ridiculous situations just so that they can find human physical contact.
Even compassion.
With other fucking humans. Mm-hmm. And so when we have these conversations and we talk about this, I have a severe problem with people making someone's sexuality the reason why, or a way to essentially either justify or rationalize people's circumstances. No, we're a bunch of assholes that have pushed these kids into having to go around, sneaking around.
Yep.
to be able to get physical contact with someone of their preference. And it's just, to me, it's just insane.
Elsie, you're 100% correct. I mean, you really are. The reality is, I mean, historically, that's what happens. I mean, it happened with, you know, African-Americans coming to America. It happened with Hispanics coming to America. It still is happening with Hispanics coming to America.
Right.
People will always pigeonhole another type of people. We're always looking for a scapegoat. And that is, you are 100% right, the biggest fucking problem. And that's what causes continual issues moving forward. I mean, literally, if people were given the information that they have today in the 80s, if they were given a space to be safe and sexual, we wouldn't have had such a bad epidemic,
right?
It would be a different story.
We caused that. We did. We caused that.
Yeah, right into bathhouses and all those kind of places where people were going to try to be safe with who they are. And it turned out to be a mixing pot for all kinds of other things. And
right.
So
I tell people the same thing you said all the time. Is that, you know, when I talk to my friends who are like, why are you involved in these gay issues? And da da da. I'm like, dude. And I try to explain to them, you know,
you're maybe involved in human issues.
I use the same words you'd use, basically. Like, this is, if you didn't have to hide who you are and just be who you are, we wouldn't get into these issues. And, you know, there's so many things that are messed up about it. I can't even tell you. But we're talking about sexuality, but it's also true about religion, and mm-hmm. it's true about race, and we're always, and America is particularly weird about creating others and targeting them in some weird way, and it's the bad part of America we have to figure out how to solve, because I'm sure it happens everywhere, but we are particularly bad at dealing with the other, and we got to get better at it.
I'm really glad that you said that, because my very next question was going to be, you're a straight man and you live in a straight world, and obviously you are interested in queer stories and queer spaces, and I wanted to ask you why. And but I think you bring a good point. I mean, from a humanitarian perspective, we're all human. And we have to have empathy, and we have to show respect for our fellow human being. And if it doesn't affect you personally, in your own four walls, why do you care what other people do in their own four walls? But if you could you elaborate a little bit more as to what interested you in the queer story? Because that's what you're doing. You're talking about queer and gay and stories that affect our community. And I want to understand where you come from as a straight man in doing so.
Gosh, it's so hard to answer that, but it has a lot to do with just the coincidence. Well, first of all, I lived in LA in the 80s, mm-hmm. and I was wild like everyone else, but I worked at a lot of restaurants, and a lot of my friends were gay, and we hung out a lot. Everybody, you know, you get off work, everybody goes and gets shit-faced, right? And so
that's what we do best.
That's especially then in the 80s, you know, and
we still do it now.
I made good friends, you know, and I have to, and I'm going to be straight up with you. A lot of those guys I rolled with are dead, you know, remains. And that is really fucked up, you know, because I didn't die, you know, and I did almost everything they did, you know, almost. Obviously, I wasn't having unprotected gay sex, but I mean, I was like hanging out, we were partying, we were rocking and rolling, and then everybody goes to their corner at the end. And it just breaks your heart. It's just not fair. Mm-hmm. It's just not, you should not have a death sentence because of who you love. You should not be treated like dog shit for who you love. You should not be, you know, I just can't deal with it. I mean, mm-hmm. but I'm not going to lie to you. I'm the same way about race and religion and all that too. I mean, it really pisses me off. It's something that I feel strongly about. And I love the fact that my kids, I have three kids, and they're cool as fuck, and they don't give a shit about anybody's sexuality, religion, or race. They don't care at all. And we've been very clear about all that. And I think we've raised them right. I love watching them deal with people. It makes me so proud when I see them.
And I think that's a testament to the work that you do and the life that you've lived and the people and the company that you've kept throughout your life. But I want to bring it back to hate crime.
Thank you.
Yes. And you're telling a story that's pretty intense. And I wanted to know two things. First and foremost, the writer. Is he a member of the LGBT community, and why you chose that particular subject or script to direct?
He is not, and that's why I'm saying if you met him, you'd be like, what? I mean, this guy wrote this? And not only because he's straight and sort of conservative in his but he's not really conservative like in the Trumpy way, but he's like a very middle of the road sort of cat. But you'd love to talk to him, but then it was the best thing he'd ever written. And when I read it, I have to tell you, as a person who reads a shit ton of scripts, because I'm a script doctor and a script coach and all that kind of stuff. And what you really want when you read a script is you want to feel something. And when somebody writes something and you were crying on the page, right. You know, it's on the page. You think, wow, I'm feeling something. This is important. And we just started running with it. And I just loved it. It just made me feel something. And you just don't have that experience very often. And like I obviously we were joking that I've watched the film a bunch of times, but I showed it at a film festival the other day where we had won a couple of awards and they wanted to have it come back and kind of honor it because it was like a big deal there. And it was not an LGBT festival, because we did pretty well in several of those as well. But this was a real moderate community, and it was such a great experience because we had a Q&A. I had Kevin, the guy who plays Tom, the father who changes the most in the story. He was there, and we were watching. The crowd stayed and spent so much time in the Q&A. And it just reminded, after a while, you start losing connection to that because you're just out trying to get to promote the movie and all that. But those people were staying, and as I was walking out, I had several sets of parents stop me and talk about their son or their daughter, and you know, like how, we don't know what to do. We loved them, we did everything we could, and they're still having trouble. And I'm like, I don't know what to say except just keep loving them hard, you know. But it was, you can see that there's people out there that need to hear stuff like this. And even when people were telling me in the beginning that this was not really an issue anymore, I thought, you know what? It's not you who are saying that my liberal friend who needs to hear this. It's the people who don't know about this. Because right. This is my dream for this film. And I don't, you know, films have a fairly short lifespan these days, but My dream is that this is the film a kid says to their parents, Dad, I want you to watch this film. I just want you to watch this. And it's the film that the parents watch. This is never going to be the hot, sexy thing for young people to watch. And never, even when we won a festival like LGBT festivals, it always shocked me. Like, because they're all at the festival having a good time. Like, we were at this wonderful place called Outshine in Miami and Fort Lauderdale. Great LGBT festival, having the time of our lives. But the films that were there were pretty wild. You know, they were pretty raunchy, and you know, everybody's there for that. And it's a lot of fun. Again, it's like having that safe space, you know, like we've talked about in other arenas. But then this little film ends up winning big award. And when I went up there to get the award, I was actually crying, because it was the first festival first LGBT festival that we had done that. And I said, I know, thank you so much. This means so much. I know we're the straightest gay film here. And everybody cracks up, because we are the straightest gay film in any film festival you're at. But it just meant a lot to me, because I thought, we can get to people. You know, people can tell their parents to watch this, and maybe we have an impact. You know, my secret dream is that maybe we save a life, maybe one life, maybe somebody looks at life differently and something, and we alter it in a tiny way and something changes. That's what always, I know that's grandiose, but
no,
I
think you're 100% right. I think you can change and save a life through this film by parents embracing the reality of what their kids might be facing. And on that note, I want to talk a little bit about how, as a director, you navigated the relationships of the parents to the story, both, you know, the parents who lost a child and the parents who are about to lose a child. How was that for you? Where did you find the inspiration to talk to these actors and get them to the place where they needed to be to really convey the story?
Well, first of all, we have two sets of parents. So one lost their child 5 years ago. So it's old pain, older pain for them. They're coming to this execution, but the pain is older, which is ironic because that's the hot thing. They're the victim's parents. But the parents that are losing a child tonight at midnight, it's right now for them. So whatever they've been going through with this process, it's right now. They're losing their child tonight. And so that's what this weird juxtaposition was that made it different than a lot of the other films. The hot problem in the moment is we have a son dying tonight. There's an added scene that we wasn't in the script that we put in that I'm really glad we did. And there's the great moment where John Schneider, the father of the son that was out, he's there. He's saying all these horrible things, and he's there like he acts like he wants to see this execution and all that. But there's, and this is going to be a spoiler, but we put the scene at the end where he is talking to Raymond, the killer, and he stops and he goes, "One more thing. Did you love my son?" And he says, "Yes, I did." That's a big moment because one, that's what he was there to find out.
Right.
Was I wrong to have him be in this world, to support him? Was I wrong to be the good father that I thought I was? Because my son's still dead. But when Raymond says, "Yes, sir, I did," that means two things. One, Raymond is out. You know, Raymond's accepted who he is now, and he knows he did something wrong, and he's accepting the consequence, but he's out. And for the father, he got what he really needed, which was, my son was loved. You know, it didn't work out in the long run, but he was right. He wasn't wrong. You know, and it was not in the script, and we added that at the end. And I think it's a big, huge deal in the story we're telling.
You are 100% correct. I was talking earlier with Elsie about it too, because that moment in the script made me think, are they going to try and stop this? Did they realize that their son was loved? And yes, there was a crime of passion and hate and anger in the story, but it was almost like you said, I mean, 5 years earlier, you could see the difference in the anxiety and the energy between the parents. And then you think, are they going to say, no, we don't need another person to die because of this? And
that would have been a great idea. I wish I would have thought of that.
Well, that's all I could think about. I was like, hearing that moment, I'm like, maybe the father's like, no, he loved my son, and you know, this world's fucked up.
Right, but also, don't beat yourself up about not having thought of that. The one thing that I found super compelling, it's the behavior of the dad through his upbringing, through the murderer's upbringing. Was not explicitly oppressive about his sexuality because he convinced himself that he was not aware of his son's sexuality. But to me, that's a very important point to have made, is how we get comfortable in not acknowledging certain things about our children and create these traumas for our children that they just cannot overcome as adults. They cannot accept themselves. And it was something that was super subtle. He wasn't, and he explains this, you know, he wasn't outwardly spewing hate.
He said, I never beat him.
I never said to him, right. But it was very subtle, where you were also not acknowledging the aspects of your son's life that were important to him. And so we get comfortable in the whole, you know, plausible deniability. I didn't know. So I didn't have to support him. That doesn't make it any better because you're still hurting your children.
Yes, that subtle crime of denial.
Correct.
It's a very subtle crime.
Correct.
You know?
And it is just as you're taking just an active part as anyone who is spewing hate you know, explicitly using hateful words, you are still denying your kids their ability to be themselves and get the love that they're supposed to get from the people that are, in fact, supposed to love them the most, because we learn how to love from our parents.
There's a little moment in the script where he's remembering his son when he was a kid, and the kid is joyful and running around and loving life. And you think right there at that moment, what could have been? You know, if your joy was, you know, encouraged, right. You know, and I think there's, you can take the LGBT part out of that. Even if you say you're just, say you want to go to Hollywood and be an actor,
right?
And your parents think you're nuts for doing that and they don't support you, whatever. I know that's not as important, but it's like, we make a lot of choices that our parents don't like.
Right.
And they can really punish you for those and really like fuck with your head about it. Rather than, and I know that parents, being a parent, I'm trying to give the best advice to my kids I can give. Maybe I'm making mistakes saying you should do this or you should do that. You know, you have to always be looking in the mirror, like as a parent, like, what am I doing? So that's a very good point. It's that subtle denial that just is working all the time.
So,
well, here's what I say. I think that people need to really watch the film to understand the dynamics and everything that occurs in the film. And I think it was brilliantly done. And I thank you. I want to thank you on two aspects. First and foremost, thank you on a personal aspect for being who you are and taking an interest in queer lives and trying to tell queer stories, talking about, you know, whether it's a documentary on AIDS and how all of that transpired, or taking a story like this and bringing it to film, whether it's realistic, whether it's real or not. You took the time as a director, as a straight man, to take upon yourself a script that talks about homosexuality and the ramifications of not supporting your children, and taking that
and denial
and being in denial and bringing it home. That's first and foremost. Thank you for being what I would consider an ally, because you're really trying to tell stories that will enrich our communities in some way, shape, or form, whether that's on the aspect of a parent who's watching the film and learning what it is to accept someone before something tragic happens. And then from a professional perspective, you've really taken an interest to looking at the underdog and trying to tell those stories. So that is also, I appreciate the fact that you do that. And I wish that more people on this earth would do that, because I think that we would be in a much better place and have a much better world to look up to when people like you take the opportunity and the time to tell stories from people like us.
Tom, are you getting emotional?
I am.
This is weird. I never see him emotional.
I am too. It makes me... It just goes right to your heart, you know. It's just how I appreciate you saying that. It's like makes me feel like I'm not wasting my time.
No,
I don't. I don't think you are, and I think that from the perspective of our show, when our listeners listen back and watch this film, I hope that they see and feel and get the experience that it is to watch something like this, to be exposed to something, to a story like this, because if you're a young person, you really start to see what could happen if you allow someone else's inclinations of who you are, what you are, define what you should be.
And, yes.
So thank you. Thank you so much for doing that. I think it's important, and I'm hopeful, and I hope that in the future we could see more projects like this, not only from you but from other directors, from other people in the business, to take an interest in telling stories for people who often are not heard. So thank you.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, and because I honestly believe we need more stuff like this. And one of the things I'm developing now is actually a limited series about my experience at being at that AIDS hospice. And I hope I can get that off the ground. It's going to be a hard watch, but it's also funny and stuff. So it's like, I think there's something special about it. It's called Kissed on the Lips. And I just look for that in the future. That's one of the things we're trying to put out in the world in the near future.
Well, listen, my friend, you let us know whenever you're ready to go live with this project. We'll be more than happy to welcome you back on the show. You have an open invitation to come, sit with us. If you're in town or join us via Skype and talk about these amazing projects that really do tell amazing queer stories.
What town are you in?
We are in New Haven. Well, actually, we are in West Haven. The studio's in West Haven, but most people know New Haven, Connecticut, because it's the home of Yale University. And so we are in Connecticut on the East Coast.
All right. Because when I initially, when you were calling me at 203, I thought, you know, who's trying to get me to buy something, you know?
Okay. First of all, don't give my number away.
All right. Well, thank you so much for, you know, looking at our film and talking to me about it, because it's, you know, I'm really proud of it. And it's so little, but it maybe can do something big, you know?
Yeah, you should be. Oh, you should be very proud of it. Absolutely.
Yeah, it was great meeting you. And I'm so sorry about the loss of your friend, because we do that as a society.
Yeah, we do. And I remember when Blake told me that he was trans, and I was like, are you sure? And he goes, yeah, I am. I'm like, I mean, you know, if you were gay, I know he was a really good looking fella. I said, there'd be a lot of people really happy about that, you know, you coming out. He goes, no, I still like girls. And I'm like, oh my God, this is so confusing. And I go, but I'm down. I'm with you all the way. But, oh man, it was so crazy. Much love out into heaven to Emma.
So we would like to honor Emma on the show, and thank you for telling her story. And I think that it is important that going forward, we understand who Emma is and what she did.
Well, when you look at the credits, if you ever do, it's Blake Palmentier is our Emma. So, okay. And she did a great job on this show. The edit is really difficult. As you can see, it's a slow burn movie, and we had to commit to that, even though our instincts are to make it go faster, mm-hmm. you know, and she did a great job and worked her ass off, you know, great friend.
Well, we're truly sorry for your loss. And again, in homage of Emma, I think that this film is going to really do a lot of good things. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Wait, really quick. Where can people find the movie?
Oh, we're on Amazon. We're on Vudu. We're on FlixFling. We're on all kinds of VOD sites like AT&T, Dish, DirecTV. And there might be more coming, but definitely on Amazon.
Great.
Easy to find on Amazon. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to once again thank Stephen Estep for joining us today to talk about Hate Crime. It is an amazing movie, very emotional, very hard to watch, but we do encourage that you do. We're going to have all the links to the movie, of course, information on it on tonight's post, and we hope that you truly, really, really, truly engage. Once again, Stephen, thank you.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
All right. So that was a very tough conversation, obviously, given the mood and the feel of the film. But we do encourage that you definitely give it a watch.
You know what? I feel like, though, it's important, though, because a lot of our topics are tough.
Yeah,
I mean, like a lot of our conversations are tough because living in the LGBTQ plus community, living in any minority community
is tough. Yeah.
And as much as we have a lot of like uplifting stories, like my gay penguins,
of course,
which are very
important. Any gay animal for that
flamingos,
matter.
I can go through the list, dolphins. it's important to acknowledge that like we're still human and we're still dealing with the things that have not been resolved.
That's right.
And the fact that we have a platform to stand up and say, hey, guys, this is something we need to recognize.
And it's not something, honestly speaking, it's not something that we set out to do. When we started the show, and I say this all the time, it was just about, oh, let's have a kiki, let's drink, let's mm-hmm. talk about, let's burn people, you know, let's be bitchy and let's be gay men, really. But halfway through, you know.
Not even halfway.
Not even. Like literally 18 episodes in, listening to some of the words that were being sent to us via email from our listeners and saying, oh my God, you talked about the story. And yeah, I love the fact that you kiki, but this was important. And things started shifting. And then Pulse happened. And that was...
Broke me.
That broke all of us. Yeah. And I think, and that's where, when everything shifted. And I'm like, you know what? I think that we have an opportunity here to get away from burning. I'm tired of burning you and telling everybody's...
Oh, you still do.
Well, though. We still do that. But it really gave us an opportunity to talk about important things that are happening in our community. And this platform allows us to get that information to people in places that may not have an opportunity to experience it firsthand. And so I'm proud of that.
I think it's great. I mean, just because it's a tough conversation to have, or it's not, you know, no one's like high-fiving over this, like that doesn't mean it's not important and good for people to hear about. And I think I always go back to, it's like a form of representation. And I think that's what we need the most of across mm-hmm. so many different, you know, kind of areas. But if we focus on LGBTQ, then I think that's a big part of it. And even having a conversation about something like this and having this nice straight guy come on the show that is really passionate about it, like, that's good for people to see and hear that that's okay to be.
You know,
like,
of course.
I don't know, like in just like a tiny little way. So I'm glad you guys are the way you are and, you know, burn away and,
me
you know,
too.
Go to the library, read some shade. Like, I'm good with all of that.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Elsie, you're over here wiping tears away.
I know what's going on, girl.
Tell us. Give us the lowdown. What are you feeling right now?
On the spot. Seriously. First of all, I was being super quiet about
they
this.
Can see you on camera, so
no,
I mean,
I don't know, maybe I have, you know, leaky eye syndrome. they don't know my experience.
Normally I'm the crier.
What's just over here chopping onions.
Uh-huh.
Right,
that's right,
it's the onions.
We're gonna make fajitas after this.
it just breaks my heart that we're such assholes.
Yeah,
it's really just that. Even the way in which we engage in conversation. And so, you know, I always joke around and say things like, you know, words mean things, which
they do.
They do. But words really do mean things. And even the way that we engage in conversation about the LGBT community, you have a conversation about human rights. You have a conversation about social justice. So I'm a feminist, unless you're a lesbian. What in the actual fuck? Please don't tell me that you care about one human's condition because it affects you and it impacts you and you're part of that group, but you don't care about the rest of fucking humanity because then you're a fraud. And it just breaks my heart.
And that's why I love you. That's why I love her. You know, it's Elsie and I work together outside of the show.
And, what had happened was Elsie came on and took my spot and she is crying. Uh-huh. And I'm like, wait, why am I not crying? And I just want to hold her right now, but I'm across the table.
Yeah, it's you know, and that's why I love her. She has a very unique perspective as a straight woman. I love the fact that you advocate so fiercely for anybody that's going through issues or anything. But first of all, I'm excited and I love the fact that you're my friend, but thank you for being also an advocate and a tell it like it is person.
Mm-hmm. And really good period. Insights too.
That's right.
I read.
Now stop crying. All right. So listen, guys, we do need to wrap some things up. So we've got a couple of more things that we're going to go through. So I'm going to toss it over to Nick because he's got a segment that we do every week.
All right.
Someone that we love dearly. Mm-hmm. So hold on. I got to put on my timer.
Okay, fine.
Oh, let's see here.
I hate the timer.
So you know what time it is, right?
It's time for Mama Kim's Minute, everybody.
And I'm going to say... Go.
Number one, a transgender man's diaries can help us learn what San Francisco was like decades ago.
4 minutes.
Two, internet raises $500,000 for gay men paralyzed in a drive-by shooting.
10 seconds.
Three, keynote Republican speaker at a fundraiser calls Buttigieg, Mayor Pete Buttplug.
Fuck off.
Four, 15 gay founding fathers and mothers. Got to check it out. Advocate.com. Five, the nation with the highest levels of LGBT acceptance is also available on advocate.com.
34 seconds and 50, excuse me, 34 seconds and 58. What do you call those?
Yeah.
Milliseconds. I'm proud of you, girl. So anyway,
y'all Mama make Kim, me nervous when you're fucking yelling to the fucking mic. 30 seconds.
Mama Kim, thank you for sending us those stories. Of course, those will be posted on tonight's post so that you guys could actually click on them and read up on them. We appreciate the fact that this woman who made that flag made each one of us one of those handmade. She sends us stories and just really engages with us in such a way. She's just amazing.
Meanwhile, my real mom's just like, can I get your Hulu password? I'm like, thanks, mom. All right.
I feel like deja vu happening all over again. Didn't I have a conversation earlier with a friend? Anyway, so we have our Gay Talk term. And of course, that Gay Talk term is brought to you by
GayRealEstate.com.
They didn't know about it, so I'm sorry. I'm just, you know, going to throw it there. So, Meg, you're going to read our Gay Talk term. What is our Gay Talk term for this episode?
Well, for this episode, it's a proper noun.
A proper noun.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Perk up.
Cruella.
Oh, that's her.
Gay nickname for one who thinks of himself as a femme fatale, a heartbreaker, a homewrecker. How could Cruella turn him down after all those nice gifts?
How did you get in that book?
Yeah, it's pretty accurate. Nail on the head.
I love it. So Cruella, I love it. That's our Gay Talk term for today, Cruella. Yeah. All right, so Nick?
Okay, so on this day in gay history, brought to you, of course, by GayRealEstate.com. The first openly gay member of the German government took office in 2009, uh-huh. October 28th, 2009 in Germany.
I love it.
Guido Westerville becomes vice chancellor and foreign minister to Angela Merkel.
Could it be Guido?
It probably could be. Right. But like, I'm pasty, so I can't say anything, right?
So that's amazing. Yeah. All right. So listen, ladies and gents, thank you so much. If you love the show, make sure that you go subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcasting service. By doing so, you get the latest and greatest of our show delivered right to your favorite device or web browser as soon as our episodes are published. I think I made this way too big. Anyway. On that note, you can also support
That's
us
what
on
he said.
Size queen.
Well done.
I freaking love her. You can also support us on Patreon. By doing so, you, our listeners, can help support the show with a monetary donation. We collect those donations every month. They can be in any denomination of a dollar or more, and we are truly, truly, truly appreciative of what you do for us. So thank you.
I'm going to fly by the seat of my pants with this one. All right, so next week we are welcoming again Dr. G for another Tales from the Tale. So it'll be a lot more fun and
we're going to be talking
raunchy.
About that.
Right. Buddy. For the STDs.
Like, yeah.
But he's hot, so it's always fun.
Yes. And no butt
wipes. Not that Steve wasn't pretty, but
she still has butt wipes. She still hasn't gotten over that.
I haven't. He ruined my life.
Yeah. So if
he's
you don't
not,
know,
yeah,
if
he
you,
ruined mine too. That's
if fine. You've just joining, if you've just joined us recently and you haven't listened to that famous episode that caused the uproar in our community. Our doctor, our great doctor, says that it's not healthy for us to use wet wipes for many reasons. One, first of all, our septic tanks can't handle it. And two, you know, you're really taking moisture and putting it in an area that doesn't have time to air out when you wipe and put your pants back on. So don't do it. Ugh. That goes for the ladies too.
All right. So thank you to our guest, Stephen Esteb. I'm saying it wrong.
Stephen Esteb.
Uh-huh. For joining us to talk about hate crime today. That's and right. Also to our beautiful co-hosts, Elsie and Meg. Thank you so much for being with us today.
You ladies were fantastic. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And
Shall we? Put Let's a dental this. Dam on it?
Let's put a... Do we have two dental dams that we need to work on today?
All
and
right.
A couple of condoms.
Oh, wait, this is me. That's our right. show is available on our website, gaytalk20.com, under show and episodes. It's also available for a free download on iTunes, Google Play Music, and Stitcher Radio. Nick announces you can find us on social media, Facebook, GayTalk 2.0, Instagram, GayTalk 2.0, Twitter, at GayTalk20. You can email us at gaytalk2.0@gmail.com. Tom, take it away.
All right, and if you need to reach out to us, you can do so by visiting... GayTalk20.com? No, excuse me. I'm kidding. You can do so by visiting our website. There, you can go on the Contact Us tab where you can leave comments. You can suggest topics. You can submit a question for the cast or an individual host. You can also call us and leave us a voice message. With any questions you have, we can answer those for you on our show. The phone number is 334-GAY-TALK. And if you need those digits, it is 334-429-8255. Don't forget that we do stream live every Monday at 6:30. Yeah. Who knows? Ish. That's right. I love it. See, she knows. And you can access that live stream by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. Ladies and gents, that is our show. Thank you. And y'all have a good night. Bye. Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Gay Talk 2.0. Tune in next time for more Dish.